Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and on the WDIY app. Today is October 9th, 2024. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 42,512, the NASDAQ at 18,291, and the S&P at 5,792. Tonight, our topic is flexible estate planning. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We are taking questions with that number this evening. And if you're comfortable talking live on air, they'll put you through. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Cindy and they'll write it down and bring it in. Questions are also available through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight, flexible estate planning. And I have with me a guest, attorney Pete Iorio. Pete is a shareholder in the firm's estate planning and administration of trust group at Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba. His practice focuses on design and execution of wills, trust, power of attorneys, prenuptial agreements, and other documents in estate planning. This includes administration of estates and trust, taxation, beneficiary representation, and business succession planning in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. He develops individualized estate plans, providing counsel regarding minimization of estate and inheritance, gift generation, skipping, and income taxes, as well as sophisticated gifting techniques. He also advises trustees and beneficiaries on trust modifications to minimize or eliminate transfer income taxes. He graduated from Boston University with a BA in math, University of Virginia with an MA in economics, and Seton Hall Law School with a JD, and Villanova School of Law with an LLM of taxation. Originally from New Jersey, Mr. Iorio now lives in the Nazareth area with his wife, children, and dog. Welcome back, Pete.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
It is. Pete, I know that we all have concerns about what's going on in Florida as well, so I want to acknowledge that we have that in the back of our mind as well as we talk about estate planning, and that we can't always predict what's going to happen in our lives. We never know what we're going to be faced with, whether it's devastation or even traffic coming into the studio tonight. So I think that any kind of planning, whether it's financial planning, income tax planning, estate planning, is critical, and people should pay attention. So tonight we are going to talk about flexible estate planning.
Right. Now, life is very uncertain, and there's nothing wrong with moving in a direction of getting your estate plan in place. Perfection is often hard to attain, but working in the direction of getting to a good place is what we try to do when we're writing wills and other estate planning documents.
So the idea is you don't have to have it all figured out.
Exactly. And a lot of people may not know this, but Pennsylvania has already written a will for everybody. And that will is called intestacy. And a lot of people don't like what intestacy provides. And that's why looking into creating a will or looking into putting a power of attorney in place is better than the default.
Can we start there then, actually, Pete? Because the concept here is flexible estate planning, and it sounds like the intestate rules aren't going to be flexible. Could you give people an idea of some misconceptions? Because I know that often I'll hear like a spouse say, well, you know, everything's going to go to me. And that may not be the case. Could you just give a snippet of what the intestate rules might mean?
Sure. In Pennsylvania, in short, if you have probate assets, so that's assets in your own name that aren't joint or with a beneficiary, Pennsylvania basically provides that if you pass away and you have a spouse and you have children, the spouse gets half and the kids get half. And that's different than what New Jersey and other states provide. A lot of people, including myself when I became a Pennsylvania lawyer, were shocked to understand that Pennsylvania gives half of the estate to the children, regardless of what you may or may not want to do.
That doesn't sound very flexible. And once you're gone, that is set in stone if you don't have the documents and the will for those probate assets.
Exactly.
So let's talk about some of the concepts that we have to understand to be able to do the flexible estate planning. So we can pass assets on in various ways to our loved ones. So can we talk about, at the most basic level, when we think of like asset titling? So in particular, I don't want to continually kind of stress like a couple and married couples, but quite often that is the circumstance, but it doesn't always have to be. So let's talk about asset titling, what that might mean.
In short, if you have assets that are titled, you know, jointly with somebody, that ownership of an asset is a contract between the two people and the financial institution. So, for example, if the will maybe says that your assets go to your spouse and your assets are titled perhaps jointly with your child, maybe for convenience purposes, the contract between yourself and the bank and your child means that the assets that are titled with your child are going to go to your child. And once again, the question that we have to ask is that what I want? And sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the asset titling could be a joint with a spouse, and it could be joint with someone other than a spouse. So if you don't have a spouse, you might have it joint with a sibling for convenience, as you said. What does that mean necessarily? Does it mean that if I have a joint titling, I know that there's different kinds of joint titling. We can have joint with a spouse, joint with a sibling, and joint with a friend. What kind of it might not, again, when we're thinking about flexibility, we've got to see what the asset titling means to see if we have flexibility in that titling. So what might transpire?
So getting back to the example of spouses, many spouses will say that assets are titled jointly with survivorship. And that in many cases is fine. There are other types of, you know, joint ownership. There's what we call tenants in common, which means that each of the parties has an equal 50% interest in property, for example, and they can do what they want with the half, and the other half is going to pass per the terms of the will. There's many different ways to title assets, with beneficiary designations or payable on death or transfer on death. And I guess the important thing for people to understand is that those are all contracts with the financial institution that are going to override whatever the will says.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so people sometimes think their estate planning is what's in their will.
It can be, and hopefully it is, but not all the time.
But there could be some coordination that we really have to pay attention. So we are also going to talk as we go through the show a little bit more about that beneficiary designations that you made. And I know that years ago when we had a much lower federal estate tax exemption, if we can think back to the time when it was like $600,000, a lot of spouses I saw were trying to equalize their estates when there wasn't something called portability and you might lose your federal estate tax exemption. I saw at that time a lot of people putting assets, tenants in common, even with a spouse, to try to like equalize these estates. But a lot of that's gone out the window with changes in legislation. So maybe when we come back from the first break, we can also talk a little bit about why you need to review that asset titling that you might have put in place 20 years ago. I mean,
exactly.
You got to look, folks. And that's part of the flexibility. We're at our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking with Pete Iorio, attorney at Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
This is Your Financial Choices here on WDIY. And my name is Seamus McGrogan, Membership and Development Director for the station. I'm stepping into the studio for just a moment to update you on the fall membership drive. We'll get back to the discussion in just a moment. But we do want to remind you that Lori Siebert, who is sitting here to my left, has generously offered to continue her challenge that she extended last week. And Lori, thank you so much for that. And for people who missed last week, she is willing to match any donation that comes in for the rest of the show up to $1,000.
There we go. Let's do it, folks. Let's do it, listeners.
So you can make the most of your donation right now. If you give a $60 membership, that means another $60 will go to the fall membership drive goal. Same thing with $88.10 or $120 or whatever amount is comfortable for you. It all helps us keep this programming on the air, and we do rely on you, so we'd love to hear from you. Operators are standing by at the same number that you can call for a question here. So you can either call right now to ask a question for Your Financial Choices, or you can call to make a donation, or both. That would be great, right? 610-758-8810. Or you can just give online at wdiy.org, hit the donate button, or if you're listening on the app, there's a donate button on there as well. And I will certainly be back in a few minutes, maybe 10 or so minutes, give you some time for discussion. And hopefully when I come back, we'll have an update and some people will have donated.
I would appreciate it. Thanks, Seamus.
Yeah, sure thing.
Okay. Listeners, please contribute. And that challenge grant is above my normal giving, folks, because I do also support the station as well. So just so you know, I'm not just a one-time contributor. I welcome back Pete Iorio, attorney at Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba, and we're talking about flexible estate planning. And Pete, we're kind of, you know, setting ourselves up for this flexible estate planning to talk about where it's not flexible. Where it's not flexible is if you don't have a plan, people, if you don't have wills, if you don't have a power of attorney, if you don't have healthcare powers of attorney, you've locked yourself into something that you may not want. So we want you to be flexible. So we're talking about some of the pitfalls of not doing some planning. And that includes not planning, meaning not reviewing your current estate plan, which still might not include a will, but it could include old beneficiary designations. So do you want to just touch base, Pete, why we have to continue to review even our asset titling, and then we'll eventually talk about beneficiary designations?
Sure. It's extremely important just to take the estate plan out of the, you know, of the drawer every few years and just make sure that it's still what you want. We've had circumstances where, you know, someone passes away and they have a will that was drafted in 1985. And as you said before, that the laws were different back then, and there were many more reasons to create trusts when the first spouse died. And we could be stuck in a situation where a relatively small estate is now forcing a trust to be created. And my job as an attorney is to try to avoid bad outcomes. And in many respects, that's a bad outcome.
Yeah. And he's a math. I love mentioning that he's a math guy because he's a problem solver. And this is what I love. We have a caller on line one. We have Kathy from Emmaus. Hi, how can we help you? You have a question on payable on death?
Yeah, to explain it. I talked to somebody. Somebody told me about it a couple of years ago. And then I talked to my lawyer and she said it wouldn't make any difference or that she didn't deal with that. And I'm curious as to, does it just take it out of probate? Does it take it out of the will or inheritance?
Sure. Hi, Kathy. In short, a payable on death account is going to supersede the will. So if if you name somebody on the account as to receive it upon your passing, they get it regardless of what the will says. So it takes it out of the will. That also means it takes it out of probate. Now, probate means basically subject to the terms of the will. Probate in Pennsylvania is not really a dirty word. It doesn't, in some states, people try to avoid probate. But in Pennsylvania, that's not a big deal. So it does supersede the terms of the will in terms of who it goes to. It does not, however, change inheritance tax or other issues that are going to apply at death.
Okay. Yeah, an inheritance tax for children is pretty high, I think.
High depends on what you mean by the word high. It's in Pennsylvania, inheritance tax to children is 4.5% in most circumstances. So whether or not it passes through the will or by a payable on death account, your children or the estate are still going to pay that 4.5%.
Kathy, did you understand that? That I think sometimes people misunderstand when they think it's non-probate and it's not going through the will. They misunderstand that it might not be subject to inheritance tax, particularly in Pennsylvania. Each state has its own, estate tax or not estate tax. But in Pennsylvania, we do have an inheritance tax. But just because it's non-probate does not mean it's not subject to inheritance tax.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was trying to understand.
Yeah.
So the advantage to doing that is to give them access to funds, or will those funds be frozen also?
An advantage could be to give quicker access to the funds, but it really depends on the circumstances that your family is facing at that time. And I'll say it this way. I am a firm believer that a will needs to do something. And if assets pass outside of the will and there's nothing for the will to do, then there are going to be problems such as payment of, bills and funeral and accountants and things like that. So, that's why it's important to, work with your advisors, work with people who can give you the advice that you need to figure out your own personal situation.
You're right. So but technically there's no advantage to doing payable on death in terms of death.
In some circumstances, I'd agree. I'm going to give you the lawyerly answer. It depends.
Well, and I'll give you the financial advisor answer. So, Kathy, I think, one of the things that people have to be aware of is when someone dies, there's like estate expenses or administrative expenses or funeral expenses. And there could be inheritance taxes, as we mentioned, whether it's a payable on death account or if it's going through the will. So here's the crux. If you have, let's say, $500,000 payable on death going to Bobby, and your house is over here going through your will, and inheritance tax has to be paid, and Bobby's got the payable on death account and wiped it out, took it the day after you died with a death certificate, who's paying the inheritance tax? When do we have to sell the house? What if the house doesn't sell? Who's going to ante up the money? So I think when estate attorneys are talking to clients, we have to make sure the attorneys have to make sure when working with the client that there's going to be funds available to take care of some of those administrative expenses, including the inheritance tax. So it's a delicate balance. So I wouldn't say that an attorney would say it's prohibitive, but certainly has to be part of that flexible planning that Pete and I are trying to talk about tonight.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that help?
Yeah, that helps. I appreciate it. I just thought maybe it would give them funds. Like I have a bank account that is, in trust for them or whatever, and so I just assumed that they could access that to pay some of the expenses.
And sometimes they will. I guess Pete's concern, any attorney's concern, is what if they don't?
Yeah, what?
It depends on which kid, right? So, no. Well, good luck, Kathy. We hope you'll enjoy the rest of the show as we talk more about beneficiary designations as we go along. Okay, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, right, bye-bye. Bye. Folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can use that number to call in and help with our membership drive or for questions. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Bob and Cindy. They'll write it down and bring it in to us. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I'm in the studio with Peter Iorio, attorney at Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba, and we're talking about flexible estate planning, which could include charitable giving as well. And charitable giving comes into play when we talk about our WDIY's membership drive. Seamus McGrogan's in the studio with us. What would you like to add?
I'm back. And we want to give a thank you to Terry from Kempton. Thank you so much, Terry,
for that donation.
Terry choosing to renew as a sustaining member. And that's a great way to give. You pick an amount that's comfortable for you, and that gets charged to your credit card each month or deducted from your bank account each month. It's a little bit for you each month, but it adds up to a lot for us throughout the year, and it helps us plan out our finances. So thank you so much, Terry, for that. We're hoping that other people can join us this hour as we listen to Lori Siebert here on Your Financial Choices. 610-758-8810 is that number to ask a question, or you can make a donation. Of course, you can also make a donation at our website, wdiy.org, or if you're using the WDIY app, just hit the donate button. That will take you to the donation form as well. And let's not forget, Lori has offered a generous challenge just for this show. So anyone who donates, she's going to match your donation, and that's going to go all the way up to $1,000. So take advantage of this. It's your donation with another donation matched on top of it.
And you could do $100, $200, $500, $1,000. You don't have to limit yourself to the annual membership amount.
That's right. Yeah. And hey, take advantage of all this great stuff we're doing. We're planting trees at this membership drive, so your donation will help plant trees at Meadow Park in Coopersburg. And that is a great feature that we hope that you'll take advantage of just for this membership drive. Again, 610-758-8810 to ask questions or to make a donation. And you can also give online at wdiy.org or the WDIY app.
Thank you, Seamus. We had another call come in off air. Carl from Phillipsburg asked the question, or it might be a kind of some general information he's looking for. It was regarding IRAs that are part of the estate, and Pete and I's radar is already going up when we hear that, IRAs that are part of the estate, how IRAs are treated with tax policy. So do you want to start with that, or you want me to frame it out?
I think I understand what he's getting at. I guess in short, strongly recommend that people do not name their estate as beneficiary of IRAs. You know, we're going to be talking about beneficiary designations, and beneficiary designations are a good thing in many respects, and they are especially a good thing when it comes to things like IRAs, qualified retirement accounts, and life insurance. Naming an estate as the beneficiary of an IRA is very likely going to result in adverse income tax consequences. So I guess naming the estate will make it flow through the will, which may get you to the right outcome in terms of who gets the assets. However, IRAs have income tax benefits that are built in, and in short, you can take a 10-year drawdown of the IRA if you inherit it by beneficiary designation, as opposed to if it's payable to the estate. In many circumstances, the estate is going to have income on the full amount of the IRA, possibly taxed at a very high income tax rate, or, you know, that tax may flow through to the beneficiaries immediately. So, you know, without knowing the specific circumstances, I'll say very generally, though, do not name your estate as beneficiary of an IRA unless your advisor tells you that's the right outcome.
Okay, Carl, so I hope that helped for the circumstances that, and that we understood it correctly, that it was payable to the estate, and neither, yeah, Pete and I both like, ah, like, because it accelerates the taxation. So that's why we really don't like that, even though, as Pete, you rightfully mentioned, it could be the same outcome. So let's pretend we have three kids. We name three kids as the beneficiary of the IRA, or we name three kids in our will. We might think, you know, okay, that's three it's to our three kids. But if you name it to the estate from the IRA, and then it's going to the will, as you said, it's still going to the three kids. But the what it is the IRS cannot identify a person from an estate. So you sometimes can look through a trust to see who the person is, and the IRS might honor that for, required minimum distributions. But when it's an estate, because an estate could pay bills and pay expenses and administrative costs, the IRS says, hey, we don't know who that is. So there's no individual. We can't say that an individual's inheriting it technically. And so there's a five-year rule, and it accelerates the distribution. And quite often, we don't keep estates open 5 years if there's no other reason to do it. So that would, accelerate that distribution of the estate even faster. Now, as far as part of the estate, if it's from federal estate tax purposes or inheritance tax purposes, that's part of the assets that are included in the calculation of whether or not you have a federal estate tax or, an inheritance tax. So
exactly.
That's just part of your assets. So let's talk about beneficiary designations, Pete. So we've already mentioned, you said on an IRA, we could have a beneficiary on a bank account, like you said, POD. We've seen beneficiary designations on brokerage accounts, transfer on death. So those beneficiary designations, you say, supersede. When we're talking about flexible estate planning, can you kind of say, how would you talk with a client about flexible estate planning using beneficiary designations on assets and or on retirement accounts, looking at kind of the whole picture?
So, the beneficiary designations and the estate plan really should go hand in hand. So, for example, if you're leaving your estate to your minor children, and the assets that are passing under the will perhaps are going in trust until the kids are 30 years old. That's a good thing. I'm a big supporter. As someone with young children, it's important that, kids don't inherit money at a very young age and do some bad things with the money. So if you have a will that says that assets pass, in trust for children, the beneficiary designations, if you have them, should align with that. So, many people's biggest asset's going to be their retirement account. So if your will says everything to Johnny in trust until he's age 30, but the beneficiary designation says Johnny. Outright.
this is critical.
If Johnny's 21, he's possibly going to cash out the IRA and buy a Ferrari. And that, once again, is an outcome that most people would not want.
That is really, really critical. I mean, I think that, and I've seen it. I mean, as a financial advisor, when we review beneficiary designations and people will come in and I'll say, well, what do you have on your retirement account? Because we're not typically managing the retirement accounts at work. That's what we see sometimes. So the 401k would say to Johnny, and let's say Johnny's 8 years old. What do you know what would happen?
If Johnny's 8 years old, a couple things might happen. The first thing that might happen is you may have to get a guardianship over the assets if the financial institution requires one. And we just had to do that on an estate where we had to file a guardianship petition. We had to ask the court to appoint the parents to be the guardians because the grandparents left the assets to the kid. The second thing is that if it's not in trust, you may need a custodian appointed. And that custodian is kind of like a trustee and they manage the money. But if it's not held in trust, when Johnny turns 21, he's going to ask for the money, and he will be certainly entitled to it legally.
Okay. We're going to have to talk a little bit more about that when we come back from our halfway point. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Bob and Cindy. You can also do some pledging through that phone number and or going online at wdiy.org. We have a challenge on the plate up to $1,000. I'm looking forward to matching that from my very sophisticated listeners. We really appreciate you and hope that you'll support us here at WDIY. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And I welcome back to the studio Seamus McGrogan, Seamus, do you have any updates for us?
Thank you, Lori. I do not have any more donations, and I would love to come back in a little bit with some. So we're just going to encourage you again, take advantage of this match that's going on. Lori Siebert is matching every donation that comes in before the end of the show up to $1,000. So this is your chance to go further with your donation. If you give a $60 membership, that will have another $60 go on top of that. Same with $88.10 or $120, whatever is comfortable for you. We don't tell you how much to give. We ask you to put a value on your listening and then make that donation to support this great public service that we do here in Lehigh Valley Public Radio. Again, the phone number to either call and ask questions or make a donation is 610-758-8810, or you can give online at wdiy.org or hit the donate button on the WDIY app.
Thank you very much, Seamus. Welcome back to the show. Pete Iorio, attorney with Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba, and we're speaking about flexible estate planning. And I want to, and frankly, Pete and I could probably talk about this for days, flexible estate planning. And so we're really just hitting the highlights. And Pete, I just want to make sure that people actually know how to contact you if they do have questions. And you're at Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba. Can you give us the website?
FLBlaw.com.
FLB.com. FLBlaw.com.
Right.
Okay. And you have those, certain resources probably on there about how people can reach you, et cetera.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I want to go back for a moment because I think this is really critical. And this is one of the reasons I love doing the show. I love educating. And I think it's really important for people to listen. And if we can put a fire under people to kind of move forward with their estate planning, it's really what we dream of as professionals who help people with these things. Because it's so detrimental when we lose someone and they didn't have a plan in place. And it's already heartbreaking enough. Don't make it worse. And in a situation where we have minor children, we have seen this on retirement accounts in particular. People don't want to take the time to, oh, gosh, I have to pay a lawyer to, you know, review my estate planning. They don't realize the cost of not doing it. You mentioned guardianship. You might have to go to court and get a guardian. You might have to go to court to, you know, even choose the custodian. So can we just give a little bit more flavor about what it might look like? Because this is critical. This is language that you may have to use on a beneficiary designation for a retirement account or an IRA. Can you talk about that for a minute and why it's important to meet with an attorney who knows estate planning, by
right.
the way?
So getting back to the example that we were talking about earlier, if your will says that assets go in trust for the benefit of your minor children and the beneficiary designation, the proper way to do it is going to be something along the lines of to the trustee of the trust under my will for the benefit of my children. And that type of language will allow the asset to not pass directly to the beneficiary. It'll pass to the trustee, who's going to be a person or a bank that you name in your document that is going to act as a fiduciary to make sure that that money is invested properly and is there for your beneficiary's, you know, health and support, and then gets paid out, you know, whenever you say it gets paid out, as opposed to the beneficiary choosing to cash it out when they turn 21. And studies have shown that many people who receive an inheritance, it's gone within like two, three years, and especially young people who may not be mature enough and they've lost a parent in that situation. They don't have guidance, and we try to protect them from making bad decisions at a young age.
And there's so many other nuances to this that Pete and I actually can't even tell you all the nuances. But he mentioned if you listeners, my sophisticated listeners, were paying attention, Pete said a grandparent named a grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
A grandparent may have had an IRA or a retirement account that they would have been required minimum distribution age. And then that impacts what kind of distribution that IRA would be required to do for a non-spouse beneficiary. There's special rules if it's a minor, and there's other rules if they're not a minor, if we were 21, that type of thing. So it's really important to understand the nuances of the required minimum distributions for these people, who they're getting it from, when is it going to kick in. But also then that trust, you mentioned the trust. If there's a trust under the will, you also, as the attorney, know there's specific language that trust needs in order for the benefits not to be accelerated. the distribution of the IRA.
Correct. And that really gets into the weeds of tax law.
I love weeds, though.
Yeah.
You can't get into it on the radio, though.
Correct. But it's important that the drafter of the will understands that special language needs to be there in the trust for the beneficiary to ensure that IRA can be stretched. We use the term stretched out as long as possible under federal law, and the goal is to defer and minimize the imposition of taxes, and that's a very important part of the will that we're going to write.
Okay. So I think it's important to talk about the questions that you don't know to ask people. Think about this as you're listening. You know, what do I not understand? And there's nothing wrong with you not understanding. This stuff's complicated. I mean, you know, attorneys go to school forever for this stuff. And, you know, as professionals, we have continuing education that we have to constantly be, you know, refreshing ourselves on the changing tax legislation. So don't feel bad or ignorant. Like, I think sometimes people are afraid to go talk to a professional because they don't want to look like they don't know something. But that's not how we treat them.
No, I mean, many people's experience with lawyers, you know, is buying a house or dealing with an estate. And it shouldn't be an overwhelming experience. I mean, the way it should be is the attorney is going to interview you and ask you questions. Tell me about yourself and your family. If the attorney says immediately that these are the things you need, well, they need to get to know you before they tell you what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important to understand our clients and what their finances are, what their family is like, what their goals are for their kids. And, you know, once we understand what those wishes are, then we work to put something into place for them.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to some flexible estate planning. We were talking about beneficiary designations and how sometimes people will have their retirement accounts and they'll say spouse and then children, maybe. But sometimes they don't have children and they might just say spouse.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a backup beneficiary, a contingent beneficiary. Contingent beneficiaries serve a couple purposes. One, if something happens to my primary person, like if my spouse and I travel together and we both die in an accident, who's the next beneficiary? So it could serve that purpose. But there's another purpose for a contingent beneficiary. We call that postmortem planning. Could you take a minute to talk about why it's important? Not just, we've talked about the will, we've talked about asset titling, we've talked about beneficiary designations, primary. Can you talk for a minute about contingent beneficiaries and why that is also critical and important?
Well, getting back to what we talked about much earlier, when there's defaults that they're going to be at the financial institution. So often you'll look at the language, if you actually go into the document, your contract with your financial institution, and it may say, if you don't have a beneficiary, it's going to be the spouse. If you don't have a spouse, it's going to be the kids. If you don't have kids, it's going to be your siblings or someone else. So kind of like Pennsylvania's intestate laws, the rules at the financial institution may provide that your siblings may receive your inheritance, whether you like it or not. Or it may get paid to your estate, whether you like it or not. And, you know, having that flexibility of naming the contingent beneficiaries is going to hopefully overcome that default language that we don't want.
And another critical point, Pete, I love it, about the default, that each institution could have its own default, and the default could be the estate, too.
And it often is.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. And then if you don't have a will, oops, no flexibility there, remember, in intestate rules. Okay, so very important. Also important in the contingent beneficiary world, from my perspective, about giving people a lot of options. I like people to have options and flexibility in their planning. A contingent beneficiary could also allow for a strategy called disclaiming.
Correct.
If you could talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, in short, disclaiming an asset that you inherit allows it to go to the next person in line. And sometimes there's a very good reason for somebody to say, I don't need or want this asset that I'm inheriting. And, you know, if there's enough structure in place to provide for the next one to receive it, then a disclaimer, if it's done right, is going to allow the asset to get to the next
person in line.
Mm-hmm. So in short, folks, if there is a disclaimer and let's say, you know, mom and dad are doing really well and dad passes away and everything's going to mom and mom doesn't need all those assets for whatever reason, doesn't want all those assets, the kids might need something. If they put a contingent beneficiary to the kids, mom could say, I don't want some of it. I don't want all of it. I don't want that account. I'll take the rest of this. Mom can say if she doesn't want something, and if they have the contingent beneficiary, it could pass to that next person. Mom's not deciding who it's going to.
Correct.
It's the decedent who, in naming a contingent beneficiary, is deciding who it's going to.
Exactly.
So that's post-mortem planning. That's some flexible planning. I've had people do that, and it's worked out really, really well. So in looking at beneficiary designations and estate planning and flexible planning, also, Pete, I think it's important to talk about the different kinds of assets that people have. For example, it makes me slightly crazy when I see people give specific dollars in a will to a charity when they're sitting on a boatload of IRA money. So when we talk about flexible estate planning, can we talk about it's not just about having the will and the beneficiary designations. It's also talking about what assets are you giving to whom?
Right. Not all assets are created equal. So the IRA assets, in many cases, unless they're Roth IRAs, they're going to have an income tax that's built into it. So if you leave it to an individual beneficiary, when they draw that down over 10 years, perhaps they're going to be paying income tax each time they get a distribution. And it may make sense to, instead of leaving it to the individual, you can leave that to the charity, and the charity is going to be tax exempt. And that $100 that they receive will be $100 without income tax consequences.
Mm-hmm. So really pay attention to the types of assets that you're passing as well. For example, I've seen where I had a client once who in their will was giving a bunch of money to, that she had a spouse and she had children, but she had a bunch of friends that she really loved. And she was giving $10,000 to each of 10 friends. So about $100,000 in her will. $100,000 off the top. I knew that she also had a $100,000 life insurance policy. So, Pete, can you, this is a surprise question for Pete, can you tell me what might have been a better idea at that point as a resident of Pennsylvania?
I think I know the answer. Okay. Hopefully it's not a trick question. We talked about inheritance taxes before, and generally Pennsylvania is going to tax on an inheritance level the assets that you own, except life insurance. So gifts to a friend are generally going to be taxed at a rate of 15% in Pennsylvania. But if you leave them something under the will, if you give them $100,000 total, it's going to be $15,000 of inheritance tax. But if you name them as a beneficiary on a life insurance policy, zero tax. So once again, it's very important to know what you own and who the beneficiaries are, because you can get a better outcome by knowing those things.
I get so excited about this stuff. Folks, we are at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We'll take your pledges. There is a challenge grant on the table for this hour, up to $1,000, and we can take, match anything up to $1,000 during this hour at 610-758-8810. You can also ask questions, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning public affairs programs weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, politics, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. Public Affairs on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. I have in the studio with me attorney Pete Iorio of Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba. And if you have Need more information from Pete, you can contact him through flblaw.com. But I also have in the studio with me Seamus McGrogan. Seamus.
Thank you so much, Lori. And I'm happy to report we have a donation from Carol from New Tripoli.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you so much. Taking advantage of the match that Lori Siebert has put on the table for this program. So up until the end of the show, Lori is matching any donation that comes in up to $1,000. So this is a great chance to make your donation go even further and support the great programs on WDIY and, of course, your financial choices.
And I've been on the air since 2009, bringing education to the community, and I love doing it. And I always say we have the most sophisticated listeners at WDIY.
That I tend to agree, yes. And I'm sure they would agree as well. Yes, when Lori Siebert came on the air, we didn't have a program like this. And it really did fill a hole, and it's a great service. It provides lots of knowledge. And I certainly learned something listening every single week, so I'm sure other people do as well. And honestly, I was thinking about it. There isn't really a lot of radio broadcasts like this that come on every week and talk about financial topics. So this is unique. This is something that you don't hear on every other public radio station. It's only here on WDIY. So support that right now with a membership gift. You can call the studio line at 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. You can also ask questions, or you can go online to wdiy.org or hit the donate button on the WDIY app.
Thank you so much, Seamus. Welcome back to our regular program where we're talking with Pete Iorio, attorney at Fitzpatrick Lenson Bupa at flblaw.com. Pete, we had a call from Joseph in Nazareth. It's a general question. Cost for a lawyer to write up a will.
It's a loaded question, but I'll say it this way. If you meet with a lawyer and he tells you that you need a revocable trust and he's going to give you a free lunch and he's going to charge you $5,000 for it and sell you an annuity, turn around, walk out.
Run
as fast as you can. So in terms of, you know, the cost, I'll say it this way. As professionals, we're entitled to be compensated for the services we provide. In most cases, for most people, the cost of a will and the cost of a good estate plan is going to be less than the cost of your new iPhone. So I view it as money well spent in many circumstances, and you're trying to help your family when you're no longer here, and I think it's a good investment in yourself.
You know, I say each person's financial situation is like their thumbprint. It really is unique to them, and you can do as much research as you want online. You can talk to your friends and neighbors as much as you want. My experience has been that there will always be little nuances that the attorney sees, addresses from the years of experience, the education, not just the education, but the years of experience of seeing situation after situation after situation every single day. It's that added insight that the attorneys have that really make the cost of the preparation, really. I mean, it really does. I've seen it over and over, and I can tell when there's good documents.
It should be a service that provides significant value to the client. It shouldn't just be a piece of paper that you don't understand that you're just putting your signature to.
Right.
If that's the case, then it's not a good service.
Right. So we've been talking about flexible estate planning. We kind of were laying the groundwork for when you don't have a plan, it's fixed because the state will decide. We've talked about asset titling and how, yes, that can work well and beneficiary designations can work well, but you have to really look at the whole picture because it's beyond just your asset titling and trying to get everything non-probate. You also have to make sure your bills get paid when you pass and someone takes care of the funeral and inheritance tax and all of that. When we talk about flexible estate planning, Pete, so number one, when someone's dead, no longer flexible estate planning.
Exactly.
That same thing can happen when we're alive if we choose not to do anything. And what if we become incapacitated? we've also taken away the flexibility in our estate planning. So can you talk for a minute about why we have to also plan for incapacitation just in case, and what is involved with that to provide flexible estate planning?
Sure. I mean, many people are going to say, well, I just need a will. And a will is a very important part of the overall estate plan, but it's not the only document that most people need. Most people are going to need a will that takes care of assets when they die and appoints an executor to manage the estate. The other two documents are the durable financial power of attorney and a healthcare power of attorney, or a living will. The living will deals with, you know, your healthcare decisions and things like that, but the durable financial power of attorney is, you know, if you're unable, in many cases, if you're unable to manage your affairs during your lifetime, and that's, you know, paying your bills, managing your finances, filing income tax returns, things like that, somebody needs to do it for you. And there's a lot of assumptions out there that, oh, if my spouse will do it for me if I can't do it myself. Well, you need a document that appoints your spouse if that's what you want. And, you know, people assume that their kids will do it for them. Well, you need to appoint your kids to do it for you. There's no legal presumption that your spouse or your children can act during your life with respect to your assets. And having a durable power of attorney in place that simply waits for, you know, advanced age or illness is a good way to just prepare for the inevitable for most of us, which is when we're elderly, we may not be able to handle our affairs. And we're going back to that default again. If you don't have a power of attorney in place and you need help with your assets, someone has to go to court and get a guardianship. And that's a thing that most people don't want to do.
And it probably costs more than an attorney to draft a will and a POA.
That, I will guarantee that.
Okay. And when you talk about incapacity and people's assumption that just the spouse can kind of handle those, and you said that's not necessarily the case, but sometimes the spouse can, you know, in advanced age, sometimes both spouses end up being incapacitated.
Right. So, and I've actually, professionally, that has come, happened several times where, the spouses think, well, our assets are jointly owned. We don't need somebody to sign checks for us. Well, if both spouses are 95 years old and can't manage their affairs, then we need two guardianships, not just mm-hmm. one. And that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So, and part of that flexible estate planning then too, so we've talked about addressing the assets. Not all assets are created equal. Asset titling, beneficiary designations, contingent beneficiary designations, the will, powers of attorney, healthcare power of attorneys, occasionally a trust, sometimes a separate trust, sometimes a trust under the will. Other flexible estate planning might include who we're naming in the will and or, powers of attorney and backup powers of attorney and executors. So I want to talk about that, but I forgot we also wanted to talk about the home.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure you get that in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just close the loop on that other, that the attorneys will help you kind of seek out or understand who your options are on your successor, executor, or co-executor, or backup powers of attorney. So they can help you think that through. Can you talk for a moment about, we wanted to talk about this penchant for people to try to put their house in their kids' names.
It's often people's, you know, biggest asset along with their retirement accounts. And there is a desire perhaps to avoid the cost of nursing care, or perhaps to avoid inheritance tax, to simply give the home to the children during life. And, you know, sometimes that is an okay decision. In many cases, it's not an okay decision, because the house that you bought in 1980 for $30,000, that's worth $500,000 today. If you die while you own it, you get what's called a step-up in basis, so that there will be minimal income tax consequences when your family ultimately sells it, as opposed to giving the house away to your kids. And when they go to sell it, they're going to be paying capital gains tax on the entire gain. And that 20% perhaps is going to result in huge tax consequences. You may save a few bucks of inheritance tax and trade it for a ton of income tax.
Mm-hmm. So this is where we have to be careful about what we think we hear in the news or our neighbors tell us. It's really important to go to an estate planning attorney who understands these nuances.
Correct. And even if there is a desire to perhaps, get some Medicaid planning, and that's not something I do, but there are attorneys who do that. Simply creating a deed and putting the kids' names on it while mom and dad still live there often is not an answer. It's just a piece of paper that really has no legal significance. So that's why it's important to have people who know what the laws are and know how to give you good, sound advice.
Okay, so Pete, we have a couple minutes left. We've been talking about flexible estate planning. What bottom line would you like to share with people, the big takeaway, other than please do your estate planning if you haven't? It's my goal in the Lehigh Valley to get everyone to do their estate planning.
I guess two things. It's important. It's important enough for everybody to put some focus on it. It's not something that is going to take an enormous amount of time, but you have to view it like, you know, going to the dentist or some other necessary thing that's good for you. And the second thing is, it shouldn't be viewed as a set it and forget it. It should be viewed as a get something done that's better than the default and work towards improving it if you need to over time. Take it out of the drawer and say, hey, is this still what I want? Are these the right guardians for my children? Are these the right executors and trustees? Are my kids old enough where I don't need to leave assets in trust? I think of the way my life was 20 years ago and where I am now, and circumstances change, and perhaps your estate planning documents should change and grow with you.
You're right, because I've seen circumstances where someone will name a sibling as the executor, and the sibling is now 76, and their kids are now, you know, 40,
right,
and responsible.
Right, and I think of my own self, and my 6-year-old and my 9-year-old someday are going to be hopefully the people who are in charge of my affairs, and I would love to make that change 20 or 30 years from now.
Yeah. So frequent review. But folks, we hope that this was helpful this evening, talking about flexible estate planning. And Pete, if people would like to reach you, your website again?
flblaw.com.
Okay. We appreciate you taking your time. Thank you very much. And listeners, next week, I'm actually going to follow up with the topic that we had tonight. And I'm going to see where you all are and do, what did I say? What did we learn about flexible estate planning, and where are you with yours? I think it's as important of a topic to kind of continue the conversation. Pete brought up a laundry list of things that you have to pay attention to, and I think it's worthwhile to kind of circle back and talk about these in a little bit more depth as well. So next week we'll continue the conversation. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We appreciate attorney Pete Iorio of Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba for being here this evening. I want to remind people that we did have a challenge grant on the table for this hour, up to $1,000 matching. You still have a minute if you want to call in and make a contribution at 610-758-8810 or through the website wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. And we thank you for listening. Thank you, Bob and Cindy, for being here. Thank you, Pete Iorio. Thank you, James. Thank you, Seamus. Pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.